You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio and also streaming live on Instagram. I am so glad that you are here. I'm Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, your host, and I am here to help you break free from body shame, binging, and diets that don't work. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. And if you would like to join me today, you can. You can call in and talk to me. The number is 323-203-0815, 323-203 your mind, what is eating at you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. The real problem is what's eating at you, and that's what we're here to talk about. The root issues for not what you're eating, but why. So I have a whole bunch of questions. Look at all this. Questions that my team has been compiling. People have asked me things that they want me to address on the show. So I'm going to randomly start talking about some of these. Please don't hesitate to interrupt me. I can always get back to this. I would really love to hear from you. Again, 323-203-0815. I am here to talk about the underlying root causes that lead to binge eating. Instead of talk problem, it is not the problem. The problem is something that's going on in your head and your heart. The problem is not food. Food is what helps you. It's a frenemy, right? It helps you in some way. It comforts you. It distracts you. It symbolically fills you. It does something for you. It is a friend, but of course it also hurts you. It hurts your spirit. It hurts your body. It hurts your self-esteem. It makes you stay in a self-hating mode. No good. So we want to get to those root issues, the why you're turning to food rather than focusing on what you are eating. So feel free to call me if you have anything that you would like to discuss. So the first question is, well, why do we binge eat? Why? Such a good question, and such an answer for everyone is different. But here are two of the main reasons why people binge eat. First of all, and this has to do with our conscious minds and our bodies, because what I deal with a lot is the hidden unconscious stuff. But consciously, deprivation on two levels. Not eating enough can lead to a binge. My husband has no history of eating disorders or no problem with food, but if he gets hungry enough, if he gets starving, he can't stop eating. I guess you could technically call that a binge because his body doesn't know he's full. So he ends up eating way more than he would normally eat. So that would be, he would be binging, but that would be for physiological reasons, not psychological reasons. In terms of the psychology of binging, deprivation is a big part of it. The anticipation. And so either I'm going to start my diet, or some euphemism for diet. I'm going to start my meal plan. I'm going to go on Noom. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. That's the anticipation of deprivation. And it's usually followed by, so since I'm starting on Monday or I'm starting tomorrow, I'm going to have whatever I want tonight. And that leads to a binge, which is like sort of, I can't have it, deprivation, so I'm going to have it now. Or the experience, you're on a diet, you're on a meal plan, and you haven't been able to eat anything with a carb for weeks, and so you end up binging on it. So that's one level of it. I remember I went to China some years ago for almost 3 weeks. And the whole time I was in China, I didn't have anything. I didn't have like a piece of bread or anything. I ate the way the Chinese do. I was having dumplings and breakfast, and I was having a lot of vegetables and protein. And I was just really, I felt great. And I was really super healthy. But when I got back, I don't even like bagels, but I found myself only wanting to eat bagels for like about a week, like for breakfast, not all day. But it was because I was so deprived of something that my body almost wanted to compensate. Maybe that's not a great example, but you see what I'm getting at. Okay. Then more importantly, why do we binge? We binge to resolve an internal conflict or emotion. We binge to comfort ourselves. If you can't comfort yourself with words, then and food is the thing that comforts you, it's really hard to limit your comfort. You're going to keep wanting comfort. And if cookies are what you find comforting, it's really hard to have two or three and then just sort of cut off the comfort by cutting off the cookies. So if you're binging, you're trying to resolve something internal, and figuring out what that is what is tricky, but that's what I'm here to help you do. Binge eating ultimately, because it is not an enjoyable experience after a while, right? It might start off by, ooh, this is good. But then it ends up being this, I hate myself for doing this. My stomach hurts. What's wrong with me? I can't stop. You're full of self-recrimination, self-hatred, but you can't stop eating. That means something is going on with you. You are not addicted to food. You do not lack willpower. It isn't about control. It isn't even about food. It is something within. You don't know how to comfort and soothe yourself. And that we have issues with binge eating and other kinds of behaviors. My book, Beyond the Primal Addiction, that I co-edited with my mentor, Dr. Salman Akhtar, dealt with all these different types of quote unquote addictions, sex addiction, food addiction, even though I don't believe in food addiction. I believe in eating addiction, if we're going to use the word eating addiction, gambling, internet shopping, whatever it is. These are all ways that we have of distracting from ourselves and comforting ourselves. When we don't do it with words, because we're taught not to recognize our feelings, our emotional states, as a society, as a culture, this is the problem. What do we do with our feelings? Feelings are simply reactions to situations. They are not character flaws. There's nothing wrong with you if you have a feeling. If you are angry, you are not an angry person who needs to go to anger management classes. You're a person who's upset because something happened to make you upset. It isn't your character. It is a reaction. If you are sad, you are not a depressed person. Some people are depressed, but sadness and occasional depression is part of being human. It doesn't mean you have to go on medication to stop the sadness. It means you've got to feel the sadness, express the sadness, respond to it. If you're anxious, something's making you anxious. Instead of, oh, I don't want to feel this, you've got to look at what's making you anxious and work through it and respond to yourself again, instead of beating yourself up for what you're doing to deal with your anger, deal with your sadness, and deal with your anxiety. Okay, just so that's my side note rant. Maybe not such a side note, which is that in our culture, we really have to get more comfortable with the experience of emotions. We are told that emotions are what makes us weak, and that we are somehow strong if we are able to push them away. So what do we do when we have these feelings? Well, we turn to food, we turn to drugs, alcohol, we turn to gambling, sex, shopping, work addiction, what a virtue and a vice in one. We turn to all these ways of distracting from ourselves or comforting ourselves because we don't know how to be with ourselves. So people binge eat as a way of comforting themselves, distracting themselves, or expressing something. Our bodies can express, Josh, hold on. I'm on this I'm talking away and I didn't see that you were on, but I see it now. Hold on. I'm right there. Now I forgot totally what I was saying. Josh, welcome to the show.
Well, maybe I can help you forget and remember what you were going to say.
I was on a.
You don't remember what you were going to say. I'm sorry about that.
And I it's okay. It happens.
I don't know if my.
What are you going to say?
Is my connection good? I was just wondering if my
connection was good.
I don't know if it's good today.
Well.
Okay.
No, I can't hear you.
I was just going to say that. Yeah. Let me hang up and try again.
You're getting better, actually. Here. I can hear you now. Okay, he's gone. Well, what I was going to say was that I know what I was going to say is that. Binging is a way of comforting. It is a way of distracting. It is a way of, hey, Josh, I remember what I'm going to say, so I'm going to say it, and then I'm going to get to you. It can also be a way of expressing through our bodies what our minds cannot express. So, you know, turning emotional pain to physical pain by eating so much, you're in pain. That could be a way of converting emotions to physical pain, things like that. So you want to get really curious about the why instead of focusing on food. Josh, how's your connection?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's good today. I don't think you can do this. Can you hear me?
Oh, I hear you. I hear you now. Yeah.
Okay, so...
what's going on,
okay,
Josh?
Good. So I was just going to say that... not much. I was just going to say that the emotions are obviously really important to me. And I feel like... they can be completely invisible. The feelings can just be not able to be accessed.
Exactly. We get so good at turning to food that we don't even know we're triggered because it stays unconscious, but we know that we're triggered. So we think we're triggered by food. We're triggered by some situation, which makes us go to the food. For comfort, distraction, to numb, to whatever it is. That's why, as you know, I created my food mood formula to help people figure out, well, if they're not consciously aware of how they're being triggered, what is it that their true need is?
Yeah, and I was just...
What have you been noticing
interesting
about
to me
you?
And is what's interesting to me is why I chose food, why that would have been the go-to. It's so interesting that it could have been anything. It could have been literally anything, but I chose food as the means of how I would deal with it.
Well, let me address that, which is that our very first experience, all of us, our very first experience of relationship, soothing, connection, love, and sort of a blissful state of being with another did, and they're being fed. And so in our unconscious minds, food equals relationship, a really pleasing, safe relationship. It means all of the things that we felt early on. And that's why in our culture, we say, hey, I'm eating comfort food. Well, comfort food really means a wish to be comforted. We say we're hungry for love, starving for affection. We use so many words in our vernacular that attest to that relationship between relationship and food. And so you turn to food because of that.
I was just thinking that, you know, what was it a cure for? And, you know, I'm using Masood Khan's idea of a self-cure, the psychoanalyst Masood Khan. And it's just interesting to me is what am I trying to cure? What's the food trying to fix?
Well, yes, Masood Khan was a very brilliant, but ultimately, kind of maybe went a little crazy himself. Very interesting person. I can see you're reading a range of the old time psychoanalysts. But the question that you ask is important, and it's essential. It's, what is this doing for me? Why am I eating? Not what am I eating? Why? What's going on within me that I'm using food to cope? What is it I'm coping with?
Yeah, and I was just going to say, actually, another analyst, Adam Phillips, is the person that got me interested in Masood Khan. He was the person that sort of showed me that. But I was going to say that, what was the original thing that food was used to try to fix or cure or mitigate?
Well, Josh, sometimes that question, I'm all in favor of being a detective and looking in the past, but when it is understanding your present, we look in the past to understand our present, because the past is not past, it's alive in the present. So what I would be curious about, Josh, is what are you possibly distracting yourself from in the present by wondering about the past?
Okay, yeah, I see that. I think we have to do that in the context of the present, and then in the context of the present, try to figure out what it was originally.
Josh.
Yeah.
No we, no us, no generalized to others. Because that is a protection, kind of, that can be a defense mechanism to avoid the personal. When you generalize to the us, the we, people, society, culture, that takes you away from the me and what is it that you are perhaps grappling with or struggling with now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just that the reason I did that is because I'm trying to get at the original,
avoid, distract, whatever it is. What is it now? Otherwise, it's an intellectual exercise.
Okay, so now
the past, and it won't help us.
Yeah, so I would say
hard,
now,
and only if you feel comfortable.
Basically, yeah, I would just say, I think it's the same thing. I think it's probably the same thing, but different players, different actors, different people representing people from the past.
Yes, that's what happens. So, what is it that is hard for you to cope with right now? What is turning to food or thinking about food, or because it could take many shapes and forms. What is it that you're trying to distract from?
So I guess it would be, that's a good word, distract. It probably would be to distract from maybe not an unsafe situation, but a situation where as a child I might not have known what to expect, and I might have been scared.
What are you scared of now?
I think the same thing. Being scared of the future and not knowing what's going to happen.
Uncertainty. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that is scary, as we have all seen in the last couple of years, right, that we're going around living our lives and then boom, something we could have never predicted happens. So you're saying two things. One is that you don't know about the future, but you and the uncertainty, and that could be very scary. But you're also saying that you don't maybe trust yourself to respond to things that might happen. These are very big, very global, very scary, very intense feelings. So one thing that we do, now I'm going to use the we, and maybe you can relate to it, is we can get very granular and go right into the, oh, but I ate, how many calories did I eat? Or should I eat that? Or should I not eat that? So sometimes focusing on food is a way of just distracting from things that are so big and enormous and uncontrollable, you don't know when they're going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And learning
I feel
to trust,
like the unknowing
to trust.
Is. Yeah. Yeah. The food is reliable, as you say.
So what you're really talking about is a giant what if fear about the future, whether it's, you know, the unpredictable world or what might happen. That is what if. What if is fear about a future in the present, about a future that isn't happening and may never happen. Often the things that we're afraid of never happen. And the things that we don't even imagine being afraid of, those are the things that happen. So what is the antidote to that is, What is to stay with what is that you know to be true right now that is reality? What is? And one of the what is can be recognizing your ability to deal with adversity, recognizing and trusting your ability to deal with whatever comes at you in life. That can also go a long way to mitigating the enormity of that what if.
Yeah, and I would just say, to add to that, is that I want. What am I really desiring in all of this? What is, you know, what am I unconsciously wanting?
What are you consciously wanting?
Yeah, exactly.
What are you consciously wanting?
I probably, you know, I would say, gosh, I don't know. I would say, you know, human connection, but I might have a weird way of going about it or something. You know what I mean? Like, if I want human connection, I'm not going to find human connection in food.
Well, that's logical, but it is not logical. This is not logical. Binge eating, eating disorders, any kind of unhappy, unhealthy relationship with food, it's not logical. It's psychological. Logically, it's like saying, well, if someone's anorexic, well, they should just eat. Okay, that gets you nowhere. You know, you want friends, you should just go make them. Food won't be your friend. Well, that's logical, but we are not logical. We are psychological. So we want to look at, well, what scares you about human connection? Because if people are scary, which they are, if they're unpredictable, you know, unavailable, unreliable, whatever, then of course food is going to be a substitute. Food, which represents in some way symbolically people. Food fills us up when people do not. So then the answer is to look at what are your fears about people? What are your reservations about vulnerability or putting yourself out there, and really address those? That's the root.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we desire or want, you know, say in romantic relationships or just platonic relationships, there's always going to be that fear.
Josh, I'm going to challenge you. I want you to say that sentence again. No, we. We is language that distances it from you. You're talking about yourself. Say I. Yes, I'm being very challenging right now. but I think you're up to it. I think you can do it. Saying, well, we want relationships, is we fear relationships, is a lot different than saying, I'm afraid of putting myself out there and I'm afraid of being hurt, right? Well, you can do it. Say I.
Yeah, so I would say that I have reservations about intimacy because of basically, not being clear about what it is that I want. Say.
You're afraid of closeness. And
did you hear me?
And recognizing you've shared in previous calls, you've shared about, something about your father and nothing was ever good enough. And kind of mom was sort of went along with dad kind of a thing. So remember, our earliest relationships form our expectations for other relationships. And so if early relationships don't feel safe and secure, then it is scary to connect with and other people. Want to challenge and work through that, the pain of the original relationship, so that you can be free to have good experiences in your current life instead of expecting people to be as they were, as the other people were. Like someone I know, father cheated on her mother, so expects everybody to cheat. Actually, I know a few people like this. There, a parent cheated, so she expects that every man is a cheater. Well, every man is not a cheater. And so sometimes we can choose cheaters, hoping to get them not to cheat so that they resolve the original relationship, as an example. But when you resolve, wow, my father was cheated on my mother, and let me process that, but not all men are cheaters, then you can have different expectations.
Yeah, I think that's right. I about my family, my mother and my father, I would say it wasn't my mother. My mother didn't do anything like that, is what you're saying, but my father did. And, he sort of just wasn't attuned to my feelings.
So then you might expect that other people are not going to be attuned to your feelings, and people become then like a little frightening, and you're always waiting for someone to be misattuned to you, which then makes people scary, et cetera. So the original wound is this relationship with your dad, who just wasn't attuned to you and who couldn't respond to you and didn't give you the experience that you wanted from a dad. And that's the wound you have to heal, so that then you can be with people instead of using food as a substitute for people. Whether you turn
to
it,
think also,
or against
for
it.
Me. Yeah, I mean, sometimes our feelings are out of control. Sometimes, I would say that maybe my feelings weren't to be sort of attended to in a way. I don't know what you think about that.
I don't know what you're asking.
I mean, I'm asking
if you didn't feel like maybe you're trying to justify. Maybe you're trying to justify. Maybe it just wasn't. Go on, Josh. I think we have a delay, so
yeah.
I don't know if you're...
You were cutting out.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh,
I couldn't hear
okay.
What you said. I couldn't hear what
maybe,
you said. I'm sorry. My connection isn't
maybe
good.
Maybe you're trying to... Are you hearing me now? No, I don't think you are.
I don't think I... Yeah, it's not a good connection.
Okay, well, why don't you hang up, and I think people on Instagram, can you hear me? I think it must... Sam is saying... Okay. So, Josh, I think that... sometimes we try to justify if we're being, sometimes there's just a misattunement. Like, we need more than our parents can give. So it's not about, oh, bad withholding parents. I mean, sometimes it is, but it's not always that. Sometimes it's just a, yeah. Okay. I see you, Josh. So sometimes it's just a misattunement. So it's not like, oh, bad dad. It's like, Dad just couldn't give you relate in a way that you needed to be related to, and couldn't acknowledge and respond to you the way you needed. Probably couldn't do that for himself either, but that affected you. So this is about explain. Amen. Was there for me. Poor me. No, that's not what you're saying. You're saying my dad was never there for me, and as a result, I don't even know how to be there for myself. So I've got to learn to resolve my relationship with my father, learn how to be to myself the way I wished he had been, and then trust that there are other people out there who can be responsive and can be, you're trying to say that it might also be on you. Yes, but not as a child, right? Yes. When we're afraid of connection, so afraid of being hurt, that we act in a way that preemptively, so we end up sort of sabotaging things, and then we say, see, relationships don't work. Yes, but explaining rather than blaming and just being really curious and not critical. What is my part in it? What is the interplay between me and other people? That's a very good question to ask, because there are that are in relation to each other. So, Josh, as always, thank you for your very good call. You always ask such interesting questions. I would, not as a child. Children are not responsible for bringing out the good loving parent. Children are not responsible for that. Do not blame yourself for that. Just say, you know, your dad just didn't have the ability to show up for you the way you needed, and this has impacted you, but you are addressing it. And instead of filling the emptiness with food, you are going to show up for yourself, resolve it, and maybe start trusting people a little bit more so that you can be in relationship with them and have a satisfying, fulfilling relationship with others. The same thing with food that we do with people. Such a relationship between the two. Okay. Let me see. Oh, how do you handle yourself after binging? Well, here's how most people handle themselves after binging. They say things like, oh my God, you're so disgusting. They say this to themselves, like, you're so disgusting, or I'm so disgusting. How could you do this? You said you'd be good. You blew it again. You're never going to lose weight. No one would ever love you. If anyone knew what you were doing with food, they would be so grossed out. Oh, something along those lines. Okay. So then, that doesn't help, because when you're talking to yourself that way, when you're terrible, and when you feel terrible, and you don't also have a way to soothe yourself with words, then the reaction that you have to yourself when you're binging can lead to more binging. Often we binge just to get away from our own mean voice. And you're very welcome, Josh. I'm glad to help. Josh is messaging me on Instagram. That is how most people handle themselves after binging. And it just backfires. And it also puts the focus on what they're eating. Oh, I just binged on all of that instead of what they're, instead of why they binged. So I say a lot of the times, be curious, not critical. Critical is, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. So disgusting. Like, that's all critical. Makes you feel bad, there's food. Curious is, okay, I just ate the kitchen. Why? What's going on with me? Be a detective. I say I'm a detective of the mind because detectives are curious. Detectives don't say, oh, that clue's really weird. Oh, that clue's like, ugh, that clue's disgusting. They don't say that. They say that's an interesting clue. That's a clue. Now I know more. That's a clue. So if you binge, that's a clue. And the thing that you have to say is, why did I binge? Not what did I binge on and call yourself a bunch of names. Why? What was going on with me? Was I too hungry and I just couldn't stop eating? Have I been restricted from certain kinds of foods and I just like had to have something that was tasty? Or is there what was just happening before I binged? What was going on? A lot of times, this is so prevalent, people are doing things like watching TV, and something in the TV show activates them, triggers them, but before they can get to conscious awareness that they're being triggered by something they're watching, they go to food for distraction, comfort, escape, etc. And if you've been listening to me for a while, you've probably heard my Chunky Monkey story more than once, because I tell it a lot. Someone who thought she was a food addict, and her proof was that she was watching TV and suddenly Ben and Jerry's was calling her name. Turned out that what she was watching triggered all kinds of stuff about her sister. But before she could consciously be aware that she was triggered, she went to ice cream for comfort. If we had just been focused on ice cream, we never would have gotten anywhere. We have to look at why, what's going on that may be hidden from your awareness. Out of awareness, but not out of operation. That's where my food mood formula comes in. If you don't have it yet, go to my website, drninainc.com, and get your free copy of the food mood formula guidebook. It's really going to help you get to the hidden reasons why you are turning to food. And if you're on Instagram, you can get it in the link in my bio. I won't go into it today because I've gone into it so often. I'm going to give you a little breather from the food mood formula, but that is how you figure out the hidden reasons. But just know this, if you are turning to food out of the blue, it is not because you are just addicted to ice cream or pizza or whatever. It is for a reason. And you want to be really curious about what that reason was. And you know, if you've read my book, The Binge Cure, I have a lot of examples of all of this, of people who thought there was something wrong with them. They thought they lacked willpower. They thought they lacked control. They thought it was about food. It's not about food. It's not about willpower. It's not about control. There it was a reason why. I talk about, the woman who broke up with her girlfriend and ordered pizza and couldn't stop eating the pizza because even though she was in physical pain, she was hurting, but it was easier for her or less painful to feel the physical pain of being so stuffed that she was hurting than it was to feel the emotional pain of having lost this girlfriend and lost this person from her life. The ache of the breakup was converted into the pain in her stomach. So important to really look at whatever's going on symbolically and to be nice to yourself. So as I said before, the person said, how do you handle yourself after binging? Well, if you handle yourself after binging by beating yourself up and being critical and unkind and cruel and nasty, first of all, it's not going to help anything. Secondly, you're setting yourself probably up for another binge. So what do you do instead? when you're being curious, when you're being a detective, what was going on with me? What just happened? If I hadn't been binging, what would I have had to think about? What would I be feeling? What? No, you would never say that to a friend. You would say, oh, it's okay. It's not a big deal. There must have been a reason. It's all right. Talk to me. Like, you'd be nice to your friend. You wouldn't call her names and be just disgusted by her or him. So where's that person for you? What I find quite frequently is that people who struggle with binge eating are super nice to other people. Super nice, understanding, helpful, loving, kind, support. To have been treated, or you like to be treated, but you treat yourself in a different way, maybe the way you were treated, then you got to convert that critic into a friend. If you wouldn't say it to a friend or someone you love, do not say it to yourself. Do not say it to yourself. Now, how are you nice to yourself if you spend a whole lifetime being mean to yourself? Right? It's pretty hard. And that's why you may know that I am Acronym Girl. It stands for validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself. So if you just ate the half a gallon of ice cream plus cookies plus whatever leftovers were in the fridge plus whatever your kids' leftovers plus whatever, and you usually respond to yourself with disgust, vary your response. Say, okay, what was going on? First you ask yourself, what was going on with me? Be the detective. And even if you don't know, I want to say, okay, something was clearly going on with me. This isn't about willpower. This isn't about control. I'm trying to help myself in some way. I'm trying to distract myself or comfort myself. I may not know what it is, or maybe you do know, but I'm really proud of myself for being curious, for being interested in me. And I'm going to really honor the fact that I'm doing the best that I can. That's if you don't know. And then maybe you say, I'm going to get that food mood formula and figure it out. So let's say you have the food mood formula. And you're like, oh, okay. I was eating filling things, filling foods that is associated with filling a void. Okay. Oh yeah. I know what the void is. I'm really not happy with my job. I want something more satisfying. Then you say, okay, of course, I was upset. Of course, I'm trying to symbolically fill the empty place within. I understand that. I get it. And I'm also, so you're validating it and acknowledge, I feel empty. I feel empty inside. Yes, I chose this way of trying to, you know, express that, but I'm really paying attention and I'm learning and I'm going to treat myself kindly. Of course I feel this way. I don't feel good in my job. I don't feel like I'm being challenged. It's not fulfilling. Yes, I feel empty. Of course I do. And then you reassure yourself. I am going to really look at that directly, and I'm going to stop using food for comfort or to fill the void, because I'm going to really challenge myself to go outside my comfort zone and find a job, or even think about finding a job that is fulfilling. And I've got this and I'm capable, right? This makes me uncomfortable being nice to myself. I'm trying to vary the shit out of things, but I'm so uncomfortable. Oh, yeah. Of course you're uncomfortable. I'm going to vary you, Regan. Of course you're uncomfortable. This is new to you, and you on some level feel as if, oh, actually, I'm going to make this up in my head. Of course it's uncomfortable. When we are nice to ourselves, sometimes that makes us realize what we never got. And it's uncomfortable to realize when you're being nice to yourself, how much you missed out on. And that is uncomfortable. So yeah, It is uncomfortable to be nice to yourself because, first of all, it is unfamiliar. And secondly, it can put you in touch with everything that you didn't get in the past. And that's hard. So that's uncomfortable, meaning you have a sense of sadness, anger, frustration, loss, whatever, a range of feelings about what you didn't get. And you might be afraid of what's going to happen if you are nice to yourself. Validate and acknowledge, reassure. But you know what? Practice makes progress. The more you do it, the less uncomfortable you will be. Whenever we learn anything, like learning to play the piano is uncomfortable. Which finger goes to what key or any instrument? What am I doing? This feels weird. This feels awkward. This feels uncomfortable. But you keep doing it. You keep practicing. And one day you sit down at that piano or you pick up that guitar or whatever instrument and you play. And it no longer feels uncomfortable. It's something you've learned to do differently. So it's okay to feel uncomfortable. You can think about things that in the past made you uncomfortable that you worked through. And you will do this with this as well, right? So that is an example of, you know, just to really go, yeah, I am uncomfortable. And these are the reasons. And I can get through this. And there's a different, I'm learning a different way. And I'm going to be patient with myself as I learn. This is not like, you know, you flip a switch, like, or you have the Oprah aha moment and everything woo, changes. I love Oprah, but that aha moment that made people think, oh, everything's going to change. I'm going to have an epiphany and boom. No, it's a process. It's an evolution. You're evolving. Give yourself room and space to evolve. And that is our show for today. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Josh. Thank you, Regan. Look for the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio, on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere you get podcasts. If you love the show, please take a moment to leave a rating or a review. The more that I get on Apple Podcasts, especially, the more it shows up, the more people that I and we, because this is a group effort, can help. So thank you. Stay safe. Stay healthy. I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.